Now, our next speaker is our first non-actuary on the podium. Kurt Zuber is the Group Treasurer for the Westpac Banking Corporation. So in this role, he's responsible for all of Westpac's treasury operations, all the balance sheet management with a focus on managing interest rate risk as well as currency risk. Kurt oversees teams in Sydney, Wellington, Singapore and London. Please welcome Kurt Zuber.
Thanks very much. I'm not a podium guy, so I'm going to probably walk around a bit. But I thought I'd just start a little bit about maybe just giving some perspective from a bank side anyway, how things have played out over the last 3 years. Obviously drawing on my real experience from Australia, but then also try to point out a few things about how Australia, while has four big local banks, obviously has a real international feel to it as well. If I start with some names, some companies, some brands through the GFC that come to mind. I just came back from the U.S., came across a magazine which had a whole bunch of companies whose debt had been issued by various investment banks, and they're very good about advertising, and we've done this or we've done that. So no particular order, RBS, HBOS, Lloyds, Wachovia, Merrill Lynch, Lehman Brothers, Bear Stearns, AIG, Greece, Portugal, Ireland. Every single one of those, and I cross things off a list, those are all areas that had raised debts in the 6 months leading into June 2007. None of them exist in their previous format. None of them exist. They're either bailed out, they're either gone, they've merged, or they're owned by government. And if you looked at that page as I cross things off, it was probably about three-quarters of the deals done had name strike to them. My favorite was Merrill Lynch. Merrill Lynch went to the equity market three times, and people kept giving them money, and they still failed and got sold out for basically a penny just about. So the GFC obviously had a huge impact on the world. And if you look at Australia, and even though, you know, if I think of the process of the GFC, peaked in kind of this Lehman Brothers time, September 08, leading into the government guarantee in November 08 around the world, and then kind of through 09, where I can tell you there was times, and the Australia banks, I think, are widely held to be some of the safest banks in the world, along with the Canadian banks. But and we had no, you know, Westpac and all the banks continued to make profit in every reporting period that we had. And yet there was absolutely times where I had conversations in a morning with various people where we were not sure exactly how this whole thing was going to end because it was so globally linked. My favorite one is, the government guarantee in Australia got announced for those Aussies got announced on a Sunday night here when it was widely expected that there was some problems with one of our banks up in Queensland. At that time, I was at an IMF conference in Washington, D.C., which is an annual conference with a whole bunch of bankers and financial industry people, regulators included. And obviously the topic of that was this was about 6 weeks after Lehman's had failed. Morgan Stanley was in the process of getting their bailout from the Japanese firm. It hadn't happened yet, but it was widely expected to happen. So we were there kind of really marketing Australia's wares, and we spent all day on Saturday explaining to everyone who wanted to listen that the Australia banks were so strong, we weren't going to need a government guarantee. You know, we had all this stuff going for us. Yeah, Ireland started the guarantee process, but we weren't going to need a guarantee. Woke up the next morning, saw the press, and I got on the phone with my CFO and said, what in the hell is going on? Why didn't anyone give us a heads up on this? And he said, we all found out the same time you did. Decisions were being made in real time. And so the process of, so that was quite easy. In fact, we had a drink that night of a bunch of Australia banks as all being AAA issuers then. So we thought we might as well drink to the fact that we are now not a AA issuer. We're one of the many AAA issuers in the world. But it changed the fabric of how things were being done. And that first government guarantee deal that we did, which is in December 08, was a deal that was about $1.5 billion. But we literally had, 12 investors. Because the classic thing at that stage was most of the investors who ended up buying the paper later on, all through 2009, didn't have approvals. They didn't know how to deal with a government sovereign guaranteed but bank behind it, who bought it, who didn't buy it, and whatever else. So there was even, with the guarantee, because everyone else had a guarantee, It was a challenge. And you were dealing with international investors, so they understood the UK banking system. They understood what was more happening in the US. Australia was kind of a bit hard for them to get their heads around. Did we have a housing problem? Did we not? Did we have some prime debt? Did we not? That led to, and I had been already starting this from August 07, which is my date of when the GFC kind of started. And actually, I try to rephrase that now. I call it the Northern Hemisphere crisis, because we didn't have a crisis down here. We were just part of it. We kind of got drug into it. But I started going on the road from August 07 till I think the first month that I didn't travel internationally was November 09. So for 2 and a bit years, every month somewhere, I was marketing the Australian story. And I wasn't, you know, all the major banks were out there. In fact, the central bank, the regulators, and certainly government was out there doing a lot of, I guess, education and roadshowing and what was happening in Australia. And I just think that context is quite important. We are, you know, but, you know, Westpac as a bank has 99% of its assets in Australia. And yet we raise over, at the moment, I think we've got more than $130, $140 billion that we get from offshore and bring it into Australia. And that's because our government doesn't have nearly as much debt as others. So we, in some ways, kind of finance this the lucky country thing that's happening here. So we are linked very deeply into what's happening around the world. So why did Australia perform so much differently than the other places? You know, what happened here? Why were we, you know, why were we better? Were we better at liquidity management? Were we better at capital management? I think the answer is we were better at risk management. So all those pieces. But the most important one, and I still believe that the reason why banks had problems was not because they were poor capital managers or not that they were poor liquidity managers, but they had poor risk on their balance sheets, poor credit. You know, if you look through crises, what happened, banks fail because they have bad assets, not because they have bad liquidity. If you have bad assets and bad liquidity, it ends quite quickly and much faster. But clearly, I think the strongest catalyst of the marketplace is always going to be credit. And we talk a lot about where's the next crisis going to come from. We will have more capital when we come out of this, rightfully so. We will have more liquidity and better liquidity management after this, rightfully so. I promise you where the next banking crisis will come from, it'll be because there's bad assets somewhere. That's where it always comes from, and it can always be drawn back to then the next one will be the exact same. But in Australia, we didn't have a recession. We had a banking system that was able to keep credit flowing because of the guarantee, and the guarantee absolutely helped that. We had a financial system that benefited from a coordinated approach of industry, government, regulator, and central bank. I had daily calls with just about those for more than a year. And we had some calls together, we had some calls separately, and that was about sharing information as much as it was about, you know, learning about what they were thinking, what I was thinking, what we were hearing. And we brought information back from what was happening offshore and what they were thinking about us. And so I think that community of sitting down together and figuring out how this is not just one person's problem or not one area's problem, it was all of our problems, was a key ingredient for why we got through this. Absolutely, our regulator played a part of that, our central bank played a part of that, and the government through the Treasury and the government played a part in that. We, I think, recognized that through all the various things, there was an important aspect here of the system and how we made it work. And that's why when I step back and say, where do we go to from here, you have to look at where we've gone to in the last 3 years, because a lot of things have changed. And there are these new pieces of regulation, and you know there are reams of things about this regulation that you can read. And while big decisions have been made at Basel, there is also a massive amount of detail now being worked to in every local jurisdiction and how we fit our own local regulations within this now framework that the G20 in Basel has laid out for us. But generally speaking, the aspects of what we've done in the last 3 years have put us well down the path of that. And a couple of good examples I think that you can look at, and I'll use Westpac as an example because that's the one I'm most familiar with, but it's not that much different from any of the Aussie banks. Capital-wise, we've all probably got between 2.5% and 3% more capital than we previously had. Substantial. You know, when you think of where Westpac holds 2 or 3% of Tier 1 capital under our measurements, and prior to that, that number was probably around high sixes, low sevens. Liquidity-wise, we have lengthened the amount of funding that we do now from a shorter duration to a much longer duration. We're much more diverse. We go to these countries and we raise money. In the last 12 months, We've raised money in Japan, in Asia-driven dollars, in Hong Kong, Sing dollars, Euro, Sterling, Swissie, CAD, US dollars, Aussie, Kiwi. In retail format, in wholesale format, in 3 years, 5 years, 10 years, 20 years. Private placements, public deals. We've pushed hard for things like covered bonds because we think that is part of the funding solution of getting access to more diversity. All those things have meant we've, I think, been able to access offshore capital into our country. We've done that because our banks are seen to be safe, well-managed, and well-risk-managed. The Canadians and the Aussie banks, I think if you spoke to 30, 40 different investors offshore and you said, who are the two best banking systems that have done well? It's been the Aussies and the CADs. So we've been attracted. As the other banks have found it difficult to refinance their debt, we've been a beneficiary of that. Much more expensive than it used to be. That's the price of doing business. But we're able to get access. So the credit has flown and the economy's recovered. Our interest rates are now slightly above neutral and I think likely to stay there. But if we look at going forward, so what happens next? Where do we go to from here? I think the system itself is going to dictate how Australia goes, but there are always natural balancers, and the central bank always reminds me of, you know, you need to kind of, there's so many moving parts to think about how the economy actually plays out, is it will have a different impact on things in the past. If you look at the Australian financial system, typically what happened in Australia is we would have credit growing at two, sometimes three times what GDP was. And the savings rate in Australia, don't quote me on this, but I think 2 or 3 years ago, pre-GFC, was between 1% and 2%. Savings rate today is 10%. More that's being directed towards bank-style fixed income or deposits because there's a more conservative investor because of the performance of other assets. And credit growth today is probably around 2 or 3%. For us as an institution, credit growth being lower, savings rate being higher, my mismatch of my loans and my deposits is less. So Westpac and all the major banks are seeing deposit growth a little bit stronger, credit growth a little bit weaker. That means we go to those offshore markets a little bit less. Why is that important? Because it's important because while we're a small percentage of the global banking system, or any kind of fixed income index would somewhere have between 1.5% and 2% of their benchmark in Australia assets. We've got all four of our major banks are probably in the top 15 of banks who issue fixed income paper in the marketplace. Now, we've just talked a little bit about why that has happened because the others aren't issuing at the moment. But at some stage, that doesn't go on forever. You can estimate. It's impossible to estimate what we've been of the market share, if you will. But I can tell you it's much more than 2%. We can't go doing that forever. At some stage, the others are going to issue more, we're going to have to issue less, or the pot gets bigger. The pot does get bigger, but it doesn't necessarily mean that our capacity to do that forever is infinite, and that's why diversity, maturity, and mixing that all in means that we're at less risk every single year to keep that model going. I always talk about our balance sheet. So how do we make decisions at a bank? How do we kind of make sure that we end up where we are? In the old days, banks lent money. We raised a few deposits. We had such a liquid system. The treasurer just filled that gap in. You know, we went and got the money. We had it coming out of our ears. It was easy. Today, it's very different. We strategically look at our loans, our deposits, our wholesale funding, and the liquid assets that we need to hold. Those four pots. And they're all interchangeable. So if we can get more wholesale funding confidently in a way that is sustainable under the new regs, then that means we have flexibility to either grow our loans faster or grow our deposits less. But if we can't, we will actually make this scenario work. We'll lend less or we'll get more deposits because we can't put this model at risk. Because if we do, that's our lifeblood at the end of the day. If we can't get access to that wholesale funding, then we end up being stretched in the way many other banking systems found it. The key being, though, is always going to be asset quality. If we have good assets, the world will look at us as a strongly rated bank, and then it just comes to be price. It's not really about price. While it's about price when we market, we know as our money costs us more, we're paying more on our deposits today. We're paying more for our wholesale debt. It's more expensive to borrow 10-year money than it is to borrow 2-year money. What does that mean? Well, if you're living in Australia, it means that the cost of what we're lending that money out has gone up relative to any measure. But with the banks, I'll try to tell you, and I'm not going to get into how whether we've done a good job of actually explaining to the public how this works. If you look at the bank's margin, Westpac, I can show you a chart, 4 quarters in a row, our margin's exact same. Between 2.21 and 2.23. It's a flat line. Well, that tells me that the amount that we're paying for the money and the amount that we're earning on the money we're lending out is about the same today as it was a year ago. So the repricing of our assets, when we mix it all in and we swing it all around, comes out at a number that's about the same. Now, is it too high or too low relative? I'm just telling you that the change year on year isn't much. So what we're doing is mostly trying to maintain that margin, if you will. As our cost of funds creeps up, we're repricing our assets at different speeds and different categories all over the place, but the net result for the bank has been about the same. And our margin, again, if you look at the four majors, it's kind of all about the same. So it's critical for us that we keep these doors open and that we're able to do that in our structure of our balance sheet and the power of what we have from a strong banking system, a strong financial system, equally a strong regulator and a strong central bank. Those are critical. If I look forward, we're sitting here today with more capital, a more sustainable balance sheet because we have longer duration funding. It means there's plenty of opportunities for the Aussies to continue to do this. Will it be at the same speed as it was before? Probably not. But you can equally see, if you look at the environment that we're living in today, it doesn't feel like credit growth is going to be at 15%. You can look at some long-term charts over a decade or longer. Credit growth in Australia was more than 10% almost every single year. Now we'd say, was that normal? Or are we going back to something much more longer term where maybe normal isn't that? Maybe it will be only 1x GDP or 2x GDP, not 3 or 4. Is the savings rate going to pick up and stay at a higher rate for longer because we're an aging population? So it does sink. Are we overly invested in equities? Do we have too much invested offshore? All those things are questions that are yet to be answered. We'll feed into some of how the bank's balance sheets go forward. I think the big benefit we've had is we've had the benefit of seeing how other banking systems have done poorly in this, and we've learned the lesson kind of the easy way. I just got back from the U.S. last week, and if you go through still now and speak to fund managers, the first thing, I was listening as a couple credit analysts and portfolio managers came in, and they're flicking through the Westpac story, and the one guy goes, oh, this is a bit of a boring story. That was the portfolio manager or the trader, and the credit analyst goes, I like boring. I don't have too many of those at the moment. So there's a real, that's... The opportunity is still there that the Aussies are, we kind of have come from nowhere. And I think if you had anyone from APRA or the RBA who would say absolutely when they walk into a room with their global peers, they get respect straight away. And rightfully so. We've got some of the best minds within Australia making some of those decisions, and we're lucky to have that. The challenge will be as the rest of the world recovers. So when the UK isn't as bad of a place and their banks will recover and they'll throw out the bad and put in the new and the US continues to go back online and they start to grow again, we may not stand out in the same way. At the moment, we're kind of up here and everyone else is down here. We don't have to change, but the others are probably going to prove. The world's going to get better eventually. The U.S. will eventually start raising rates again. The U.S. banks will start to grow again. So Bank of America, J.P. Morgan, they'll all be back into the same sphere that we are in. What does that mean for us? I don't know. I think we'll still be able to get our fair share, but what is that fair share going to be and how does it look like? Those are some of the challenges that we're going to be dealing with from an Australian bank's financial perspective. But I think there is a... we're lucky. I can tell you, like with all the marketing that I've done, I promise you, I can tell the story about the Australian banks and Westpac in my sleep because I've told it that many times. There's probably not too many other bank stories that I'd rather have told right now than the one that I've been able to tell from Australia's perspective. The regulatory change is important, and we're transitioning that. But I think, generally speaking, that's not the challenge that I'm looking for. That's pretty much where we need to be already. So we're in a good space. I'll cut it off there, pass it on. Thank you.
Thank you, Kurt. I'm looking forward to exploring some of those issues in question time.